Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, it's Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk Podcast. So glad that you're here. I appreciate that. You know that. I say it all the time. You know, this is where the industrial professional comes to talk. The individual that really wants to make an impact in the industrial space, this is where. I get to interview great people, leaders within the industrial space, and I'm very fortunate. I'm living a dream, as you might know. And I do. I am the Industrial Talk Podcast is the number one industrial-related podcast in the galaxy, in the universe. So I'm pretty proud of that because, well, it's because of you guys. So thank you very much. Let's get on with the show. We've got a big jam-packed show to talk about. Hey, you know what? You know what's an industrial-approved food? Yeah, that's a tomahawk chop. A tomahawk ribeye. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. A tomahawk ribeye. I had that with the Mother's Day barbecue. And I had to bring out the big guns because of that big old rib, that thing that just stuck off the side there. I had to be cut off with my Sawzall. That's industrial approved. And another food that's industrial approved, and write this down, get your note, you know, paper and pencil, bacon. There's nothing wrong with bacon whatsoever. I got to tell you that right now. Okay, enough with the frivolities and all that stuff. I got my coffee in hands. We're ready to get going. Let's start with the tailgate.
Tailgate talk number one.
Okay, so I'm going out there to reliabilityweb.com. Right, that's reliabilityweb.com, and I'm interested. Let's say I'm interested in reliability and being in the reliability profession. Well, I'm going to go to reliabilityweb.com because they have everything that I need as a reliability, or anybody that's interested in asset management, reliability, and so on. I'd go out there, and then I'd say, hey, why don't I just go out on the events? So I go out on the events at reliabilityweb.com, events, and boom. I see all of the events and then some. And so a couple of ones that I want to really highlight that you need to put on your calendar because I'm going to be there and I want to be able to meet you, just come up and talk to me, is there's a Maximo World, which is a big one, and that's going to be in Orlando area. That's August 7th through the 9th. That's Maximo World. And Reliability Web does a great job at doing that. And then another one, which is right around the corner from where I live, and that's in New Orleans, and that is the Vibration Institute, and that is the Asset Conditioning Monitoring Program, the symposium there, and that's July 17th to July 19th. Put that on your calendar. I highly recommend that you go there. And then if you go out there and just go into the events, you'll see a bunch of other events out there, and I guarantee you there's one near you if you are interested in expanding your capabilities. It's out there. And also, I want to make sure that you know that my affiliation and relationship with Reliability Web, we've got Reliability Talk Radio out there. We're gearing that up, so stay tuned for that one. We highlight all of the wonderful thinkers that are within the reliability space. So that's the latest there.
Number two.
Okay, I want you to go out to industrialtalk.com, right, and look at the dojo. I've been firing that podcast out on a daily basis, and it's right now we're really addressing leadership and that mindset. We're trying to get the mind right because really what we're all about is trying to fill that funnel with opportunities. But to do that, you got to have the right mindset. So I've got a number. I think I'm at 16. Yeah, 16, 17. We're going to take it all the way up to 20, and then we're going to start to shift into what brings in revenue and what strategies that can be deployed there. So, you know, check it out. That's at industrialtalk.com. Find the Industrial Dojo. Ta-da! You're right there. Okay, so let's get on with the interview. This is an interview that came about as the IMC 2017. This was in Bonita Springs, a lovely location. This was also brought to you by those fine people at reliabilityweb.com. And I was able to interview a ton of people, and I'm still going through all of the content that I gained from that particular event. And so this one is, the gentleman's name is Darman Dalia. That's Darman Dalia. And in the interview, of course, I butchered that name because, well, I had to keep on telling myself it's Darman Dalia, Dalia, Dalia. So nonetheless, he is a man that is focused on on reliability, of course. He's out of Canada, and he's written a book, and we talk a lot about that. So without further ado, you don't want to hear me drone on and on about, you know, stuff. You want to hear about the real guy, the real professional. That's Dharmen Dalia. So enjoy the interview. All right. Thank you very much for joining. And like I said, man, we got a great interview here. Hey, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
And this is I'm gonna give this a shot once again because everybody knows that I butcher the names, but I'm gonna do this. That's Dharmen Dalia.
Dalia.
See, I had it right, and before our conversation, it's Dalia. So that's Dharmen Dalia. So thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. How's the conference going for you?
Excellent. It's a great venue and a great place to be.
Oh, it's awesome.
Networking, yeah.
Yeah, Florida's really tough, huh? It's sunny, it's nice and warm, and oh, yes, and the resort is nice. Everything's great about it. So, for our listeners there, Dharmen, hey, give us a little background of who you are, and we're going to be talking about your book because it's well written and all that good stuff, but talk to us a little bit about who you are.
Well, I'm a mechanical engineer. I've been in the industry for around more than 26 years now, very much so involved in operations, maintenance, engineering, reliability, project management. And for the last five years or so, I've been involved in asset management. So taking a job on asset management, which actually is a different field.
Now, your background is heavily into the engineering and all of that good stuff and in industrial. Did you just sort of say, oh, here's this an opportunity to get into asset management, that's sort of an interesting subject. Did you just sort of fall into it, or did you find yourself really sort of attracted and you've been sort of thinking about it, but how did you get into it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The fact that I've been spending so many years in dealing with assets from a maintenance reliability perspective and operational, there was something missing about it to kind of connect the dots. And the opportunity came, two things came at this almost at the same time. One is that the asset management field was going through lots of changes within all the industries, especially in the public industry where and the private industry, where they were talking about ISO 55000. This is where I saw that there's an opportunity coming, and lots of openings were coming around that they needed people to look after their assets from a more holistic perspective. So I got that opportunity, and I was also able to participate in the development of the ISO 55000 standards, working as a representative on the team from Canada.
Now, where do you work right now there?
Currently, I work for the town of Halton Hills, a small town in Canada, about 60,000 people, and as corporate asset manager.
And the book that is titled Physical Asset Management, The Organization Challenge, right? The Organizational Challenge. Is it a result of your work with that town, and you're saying, okay, I'm doing all this stuff, and I see some of the challenges. I want to put it in a book and see how we, you know, communicate that.
No, I won't say directly for my current job. I started this job in March this year.
You're new.
I'm new there.
Okay.
I would say it's mainly my years spent at the City of Toronto, where I worked for the last 9 years. First of all, in the maintenance and reliability field, for about 5 years, and then 4 years as asset manager.
Right. Now, there's two entities or two sort of silos that I see with business, and one is the public sector, and the other one's a private sector. And the government entities, are they? Do you find there is a greater desire or embrace of the asset management principles versus maybe the other companies?
That's an excellent question, and I even wrote a few blogs about that. And in my book, I touch on that, is that they are two different beasts, and they approach asset management in different ways. That's my opinion. What I found is that in the private sector, the fact being the different stakeholders, the expectations, there's more for a bottom-up approach where you have to do the maintenance, the reliability aspect of it. While in the public sector, it's more driven from a political perspective where you have to show good planning, so it's top-down driven. And so in both industries, there are gaps, And that's one of the reasons I kind of say, okay, how do we bridge that gap, bring the top-down and bottom-up approach together?
Yeah, because it's difficult in a private sector business where to try to affect change, to try to affect a program that is, quite frankly, very challenging and complex, but the value and the benefits are apparent from the bottom up. And that's where there's been that gap of saying, okay, C-level people need to understand, first off, the value of it, and it's a marketing issue, but also the time expectation, because it doesn't happen overnight. You don't just walk in, flip a switch, and now all of a sudden you're dandy with your asset management. And I find that the public sector space, there's that desire, but then there's also that sort of stick. If you don't do it, I'm going to beat you over the head with this stick, and it's like a regulated entity too. So they're going to say, you do it, or we're going to penalize you. So there's a motivation right there.
Right. Yeah, and the private sector is mainly about getting the results right away.
Yeah.
It's the principal agent problem, right?
Yeah, it is.
We invest the money, we need to see the returns. While in the public sector, it's more about the image and the perception that you will show to the public and the community, right? So getting
Absolutely.
The planning correct, the budget correct, and...
Yeah, but you know as well as I do that the public space has a tendency to be a little bit more forgiving when it sort of goes a little longer and it's sort of in line with that asset management. Private, like you said, it if I spend a dollar here, it better spit out $2 at the bottom, and it better do it in a quarterly basis.
Right.
Or if I don't see that, then you know you've got a nasty story to try to tell. So I hear you. So let's talk a little bit about your book here. So. You definitely got the chops, the skills to be able to do what you're doing, and definitely the experience. How did you come about and you're saying, okay, I want to write a book? Explain to me a little bit about how that thought process occurred.
Well, it's been floating around for many years that I needed
In the
to,
head?
In the head. and that's one of the things is if you have an idea, you better make it happen. Otherwise... you will see the product on the shelf somewhere else. So a few ideas floated in my head for the last 4 years. But then later on, I saw a book published already with that same idea. So I said, okay. And that idea about this particular book came and said, let's get to the job and get it done. So it took me 2 years to kind of write that book. And it's mainly about seeing...
You 2 years, you did this book. You wrote this book.
Yes.
I got to tell you, man, that's a spectacular accomplishment because that's not easy.
It is not easy. Yes, I can tell you.
It's not easy, man. You know, I know that there are a lot of people who sit there and dictate, and then it gets transcribed, and then some editor comes in and says, that's not a good sentence, so let me do this. And so it's a different process. You actually wrote that book.
Yes. Yeah,
that's impressive.
And that's with a full-time job and family life also, so it was not easy.
Now you're just flaunting your capabilities now. You're just making me feel like I'm such a loser. I don't know. That's amazing. That's an incredible accomplishment. Now, so you wrote this book, and what are some of the steps? So if I were to pick up this book, what are you taking me through from that perspective? And I like the organizational challenges. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, what motivated me or inspired me, I would say is the better word, to write the book is what I've been experiencing for the many years I've been working in the industry. It's not the technical part of it. We got lots of many techniques, technologies, practices out there.
The whole expo had all this technology out there. I mean,
right.
It's pretty cool stuff.
It's cool stuff. We need that. We need
cool
it.
Stuff.
But what was needed is how do my people to understand and voice it out that there's an issue with how organizations work. And this book is about... if you look at the book, it's mainly divided into chapters for specific functional areas in organizations. And to tackle the problem of organizational silos, functional silos, which is a huge syndrome. And the question is, how do we bridge those silos? We need to understand the silos' effects first, but also there are ideas that we should break them. We cannot break those silos because this is the way organizations have been designed. And it's working well,
right.
But it's up to us to kind of make it work together.
Well, The other element, and I'm having a, unfortunately, I have not read your book, and I just, in fact, I just picked it up in a few minutes ago from the bookstore over here at MRO Bookstore here at the conference. There's that one element where you're saying, okay, we've got these silos, and how do you sort of bridge those silos? But how do you sustain it? Because it's sort of the dynamics of organizations just naturally begin to silo back. And unless you have the constant care and feeding from the sea level, they just sort of go back to their old, tribe in a sense.
Right. And one other reason why it's very much needed to put it in writing is I had the same thought. How do I make it happen and sustain it? Like, not make it happen just for one time.
That's right.
So a couple of things came to mind. Is one, nobody's at fault here. It's just that the way we've been designed to deliver results. So two things. One is, how about to educate and bring the awareness to all my colleagues, all the other peers at work? And the second is to make them understand about the holistic approach of asset management, how their work impacts positively or negatively the way we deal with assets in the organization. So based on these two main objectives, this is how the book is scoped around.
Sure. Okay, you're going to hold on to that thought. We're going to take a break right now. You're listening to the Industrial Talk podcast. We're talking a lot about asset management. A gentleman by the name of Darman Dalia.
Practice makes perfect. Keep going.
And definitely about asset management. We're really pleased that you are joining us. We are live from the IMC 2017 conference. This is brought to you by the fine people at ReliabilityWeb.com. Please stand by, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right, attention, let's get out your calendars right now. We've got a couple of events that we have got to highlight. And these events are brought to you by the wonderful people at Reliability Web. So the first one is July 17th through July 19th, and that is in New Orleans, Louisiana. And this is a training workshop, and it's called Asset Condition Management Training Symposium. Because I live near New Orleans, you know I'm going to be there. So I want you to be there so I can meet you most definitely. The second one is Maximo World. That's Maximo World. That's August 7th through the 9th. And that's Lake Buena Vista, that's Orlando area. And if you have any interest whatsoever in knowing more about Maximo, the services that it can provide, and the tool that it is, Maximo, I highly recommend that you go to Maximo World. Now, the reality is that you have any interest whatsoever in, let's say, reliability, asset management, as well as maintenance, ReliabilityWeb.com has an event for you. As I look through their calendar and their schedule, they're just jammed all year with training, meet in the reliability space. So if those don't work out for you, I guarantee you can find one, but I highly recommend that you connect with ReliabilityWeb.com for all things reliable. I'm going to be there. I want to see you there too as well. Have a wonderful day. All right, we're back from IMC 2017, brought to you by the fine folks at ReliabilityWeb.com. There might be people milling about the place. You'll hear it in the background, but that's all a part about being live at a location. We are also in Florida, which is really not very difficult either as well. So we're talking to Mr. Darman here. And when we were breaking, I asked him, I just, what makes this book so different and unique? And why would I, as an asset management professional, pick this particular book up, given, gosh, I mean, there's tons of information out there. So Darman, with that, what makes that book special and sort of thought-provoking?
Well, the first thing is the book is written not from a technical aspect, but mainly with a very, very simple language, and it's mainly geared towards everybody in an organization who deals one way or another with the assets. So it could be anyone, not only from maintenance engineering, but anybody delivering capital projects, anybody in finance looking at spreadsheets with asset valuations, any senior management who has some decisions to make about assets. So it's mainly that And especially if, for example, we might not be aware, but when we look at the diagram on page 85, where you have all the activities happening in an organization, and they are all targeted to the assets, and it's a chaos life for the assets, dealing with all the people, one coming to maintain it, the other one repairing it, and another one replacing it. So it's a nightmare. So this book is about the holistic approach. Now, when we talk about holistic approach of asset management, the first thing that comes to mind is all the life cycle phases of an asset. But I take it to a different level. I said, yes, all the life cycle phases of an asset is holistic, but what about all the functional areas that's an organization of an organization?
Right.
So for me, that's the capital H, holistic. Right?
Right.
And we look at it not only from an asset perspective, but also from an organization.
Well, here's the funny thing, because you're right about that. And I think from the, I'll use the term lexicon. When I came to this particular conference, there is a very interesting lexicon of acronyms and other things that people take for granted that I know, which I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, so I always have to say I don't know what that means. But to develop a book that recognizes the importance of asset management, but brings it to a level where people can understand it, because I think there's a big gap there. And so that's unique, because a lot of these books, there's no way I could pick it up. I mean, I could pick it up and look at the pictures, but that's about it, and it stops right there. So you're saying your book has that capability of being able to sort of bridge and say, hey, this is the importance of asset management, and I can communicate those important points to multiple people within the structure.
Right. And like I mentioned, just one other point is that it's the chapters, when you look at it, is you will have one chapter on project management, one on operations management, another one on procurement. And in each chapter, you will have a case study that will kind of illustrate the issue. And there's no answer to the case study, but it just kind of teases your brain and try to make you think about what would you do in that situation? Oh, and that situation, we do live it every day, maybe not every day, but very often in the organization.
Yeah.
And how do I usually deal with that? So you can take those case studies within your organization, set up a meeting and brainstorm with everyone and say, guys, how can we deal with this type of situation? How do we deal about that?
I got to tell you, the opportunity to be able to market, I guess communicate that value. You know, when you're looking at an organization, there's one organizations that are driven by projects. We have money. We want to get it done in time and on budget. Boom. That's their focus. That's their goal. That's what they do. And beyond that, you know, might not given much thought. The C-level folks are always looking at the bottom line. And then you get the procurement people who are looking at buying the cheapest, because that's their incentive, is being very frugal with every dollar to procure the equipment needed to keep that asset running. Those are disconnects all over the place, because it might not, as a whole, together, doesn't achieve what it needs to achieve. And so your book, in a sense, highlights those challenges.
Exactly.
And tries to draw a clear distinction between, and those are the bridges of those silos that you're talking about. How would you sustain that?
So, as you will see in the book, it doesn't provide any answer to those questions, but it mainly highlights those issues so that you can take it to an organization. Now, how do we sustain those? What are the solutions, and how do we sustain that? Will all depend on the leadership of the organization and the culture. Leadership in terms of, because at the end of the day, somebody somewhere make those decisions.
Yep.
And usually it's at the top of the organization, but what we say, it needs to be aligned.
Yep.
And it needs to be done not in silos. So when we talk about alignment, it should be vertical alignment, which means that whatever decisions has been made at the top, make sure that at the shop floor we do things to impact those decisions in a good way. And also we need to have horizontal alignment, which is between the different functional areas, cross-functionally, those decisions, whether I have my target to be a lowest cost producer, but I also make sure that I don't have breakdowns. So all that has to be worked out collaboratively.
Right? Yeah, you know, it's, excuse me, it is interesting, because let's say that leadership. And this is this happens every day. And it, I like I said, if somebody has the silver bullet in knowing how to handle it, you know, this is going to be something else. Let's say I am a C-level guy. I recognize the value of properly managing my assets. And I make the decree and decision that, okay, here we go. We're going to go down the road. And I bring in the right people, and they head down that road. My life expectancy at the C-level is probably relatively short. And I'm recognizing financially that I'm going to say, I'm going to spend money today, and it's going to impact my bottom line tomorrow, because I know that there will be value. Okay? There will be. But I have to stick it out. But my life expectancy as a leader is probably very short. And when that other new leader comes in and he sees the financials and he's saying, why are we spending so much money on maintenance at this time? Because it does taper off. But at this time, and its impact, we're going to cut maintenance. And has no clarity into the strategies that have been agreed to. I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you ward against that. That's the dynamics.
That's a great point. And I also don't have the answer, but it's well said that a CEO's lifetime is in an organization about 3-4 years, maybe.
Maybe.
And the asset will last 25, 30 years.
That's exactly right.
Right? So at the end of the day, what we want to do is to make sure that everybody's aware, and us as the asset managers, we all are asset managers, being able to voice out whenever decisions are made to challenge those decisions backed with facts and figures and numbers, right? Otherwise, and one of the key criteria of asset management is about decision making, being a fact-based,
right?
When you do make decisions, it's not about just my wish list, but being backed with certain facts.
Right.
And so I would recommend to being able, as asset managers, to kind of push back on those cost-cutting, but we need to be able to show what are the impacts and consequences of those cost-cutting.
I got an idea, and I'm going to give it to you, and you're going to run with this. We have a chief financial officer. We have a chief operating officer. We have chief whatever, chief executive technology. Why not have a chief asset management officer? Now, that's where it could stay, and somebody who gets that particular position understands the relative nature of what's been discussed and why it's important, and that's a C-level guy that has a seat at the table for those decisions. That's right. We've made that decision here. It's our decision. Well, it's yours now. Anyway, why not? Why not have that? Because that would maintain continuity.
I would say for certain organizations, depending on the asset intensivity, it could be. It could happen.
Right.
And because at the end of the day, there's so much decisions. The way we look at asset management nowadays, the C-suite, they will do strategic planning.
Right.
But when we look at holistic asset management for an organization, it's similar. It's a similar approach, but more targeted toward assets.
Right.
So why not having a chief asset?
Yeah, why not?
There
is some continuity there, and it has the value. And then because our life expectancy at the C level is, what, 3, maybe 4 years, maybe less than that. But at least you have the focus on the purpose behind that chief asset manager.
Correct.
And that's pretty good. Now, and I would imagine because of the from a government perspective, if that public space, they tend to be in there a little longer, theoretically, and your budgets are a little, I don't know, there's a lot more structure to it, you know.
Yes, because it's all public information.
It is.
So you need to be to
That's
have everything,
point.
All your ducks lined
That's
properly.
True.
Everything is public. They will see, they will question it. While I did write a blog about that, while in the private sector, it's done within a boardroom, and decisions made,
right?
And done deal and pushed down, right? While in the public sector, before it even approved, it's out there, public to kind of look at it and slice and dice it.
Yeah, and somebody can come back and say, hey, you said this on this day, and that's what the public record said. And so hold on to that thought. We'll be right back. We're broadcasting live from the IMC 2017 conference. This is the 32nd annual event brought to you by those fine people at Reliability Web, and we'll be right back. Hey, once again, this is Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk. If you like what you're listening to, please feel free to sign up for the free podcast as well as the blogs. I'll try to keep it all relevant to your business and hopefully be able to provide some insight into what we do at Industrial Talk and what you do as a professional. Hope to see you soon. Thank you. All right, we're ready to wrap it up. That was a great interview. Darman Dalia. Jeez, man, that's 2 out of 3, by the way. That's pretty doggone good. If you only knew how I'm sweating it over here every time when I look at the name and I'm going, I'm going to butcher it, and I don't, and I feel very proud of myself. So, Darman, your conversation touches upon just amazing stuff, and that book looks like it's well-written, and I got to tell you, for a person to actually write a book these days, for 2 years of insight and work, that's a heck of an accomplishment. Well done. So there's people out there that want to get a hold of you. How do they get a hold of you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter.
So LinkedIn, and that's DHARMEN.
Correct.
And DHALIAH.
Correct.
Okay, and no, they're not going to pull up some other Darman Dalia out there.
No, just
okay,
Google my name.
Man.
Google my name, you'll
get
linked
stuff
to LinkedIn, and also I have a website that I post blogs regularly, and I have great plans going forward in terms of bringing more value and expanding on that book. A few ideas.
Volume 2.
I won't say volume 2, but more of a continuity of that book to provide more guidance, because I did a presentation yesterday,
right.
And it was a wow factor for quite a few attendees.
They liked that. Yeah.
And they see their challenges that they're facing in the organization. So what I would say is connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter.
You got a Twitter account.
I have a Twitter account as well.
Same thing, Darman.
So same thing, Darman Dalia. Yeah.
Okay. And then your website, what is it?
It's darmandalia.org.com. Yeah.
It's a .org?
Yes.
.org out there, guys, .org. So, and that's where they can find all that good information about you.
Yes.
Well, fantastic. I know you're a busy man. You're going to be flying back home today, and I really appreciate you slipping me in. And from here, you're going to go to a meeting with Terrence or Terry and take care of business there. Thank you very much. We are broadcasting once again live from IMC 2017. The fine people at Reliability Web have put on an incredible conference, and a lot of fantastic people have come here. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right, it's Scott McKenzie. We're going to wrap this up. We got to put this in a can. We got to get it on out there so that you can start listening to the wonderful interview. That's Mr. Darman Dalia. He's a passionate man about his reliability and does great things, and he put it in a book. So go out and find that book and help support Darman, because he really does have a heart to make things better. So thank you once again for joining. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you know where to get a hold of me. We're at industrialtalk.com. Got a LinkedIn account, Facebook account, Twitter account. We're even gearing up on our Instagram, so we're trying to post some stuff there. So thank you very much. We're going to keep it fresh. We're going to keep it going. And I want to say thank you to everybody that's out there who's supporting the Industrial Talk podcast. It's because of you. We get to do this, and I get to live a dream, because there's some wonderful people out there that need to be highlighted and that need to be put on this show. So if you want to be on the show, you know where to get a hold of me. So thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. And as always, be safe.